This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Audible.com has over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. To start your trial today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time. Happy football opening week, everyone. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham and Marcus Vanderberg. What is going on, fellas?
It's been a good week, Nate.
What's up, Nate?
He's still trying to push this Nathan thing.
I said Nate. I like went halfway. I was about to say Nathan, and then I cut off at the TH. So it was kind of a hybrid. But I know that you don't like going by your government name, so Nate is going to have to stick.
So I'm going to need you to watch your boy, Marcus.
He's my boy now?
I'm nobody's boy. Those days are over.
Am I my brother's keeper?
Toby.
But as I mentioned, it is the first week of the NFL. We also had a great week in college football. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But before we get started, fellas, I got some bad news. We got to be serious for a moment. And we got to send our condolences to one of the greatest players the National Football League has ever produced. This is a man that single-handedly has won many fantasy football leagues. A man that has excited many NFL fans. A man that has put an entire city on his back. And, of course, I'm speaking about the one and only Jacoby Jones.
He gone!
That's what brother, happens.
Brother Jacoby, we wish you many happy returns.
I don't.
I'm not very religious. I'm not very religious, but I do believe in fantasy football gods. And we had our problem with this league. And our biggest complaint, the personification of our complaints, was a guy like Jacoby Jones who can get off because of return yards, not because of receiving. And what happened? The studs like Demaryius Thomas and Peyton Manning, who me and Marcus own respectively, went off. And Jacoby Jones went down.
I'm going to need you to be a little bit less gleeful about this man getting hurt. Brother,
you're right. I do not wish injuries upon anybody.
It's the way he got hurt, though.
I really hope he recovers, but, you know, it happens.
To get hurt, like, to get hurt by your own teammate is pretty comical.
I mean, if there is one silver lining, it's that the franchise's secret weapon has now been dismantled.
Yeah, well, he still won this week, so it didn't matter.
I mean, if only all evil dictator's secret weapons could be dismantled this easily. If only Barack Obama could take out a football player and dismantle serious chemical weapons, the world would be a better place.
Actually, the franchise doesn't own Jacoby Jones.
Really?
No, it does not.
Well, is that because he dropped him?
Let's see.
I'm sure he rage dropped him right after he got hurt.
Oh, yeah, he is on waivers, so yes. That was probably the case.
That's very disloyal. How you going to do that to Jacoby Jones, man? He will return. We all know that.
Fantasy football is a very cutthroat game. It's what happens.
Speaking of fantasy, we might as well continue the theme. And the Manning boys, man. Peyton Manning, of course, the Broncos, met Jacoby Jones' Baltimore Ravens in the first game of the NFL season this past Thursday. And Peyton Manning, he might be the grand old man of the NFL, but this past Thursday, he was out there stunting like them young boys. He was doing that, daddy. Because Peyton Manning had a game for the ages, and to my dismay, because the dude I was playing against, I think I can't remember who I'm playing against, but they had Wes Welker, and Wes Welker ethered my squad this week.
Yeah, what's with you Kings? You both are losing currently and don't look like you're coming back. I have to hold it down for the host of the show with my team battling all odds and getting out to a very large lead over
How is Marcus losing with Peyton Manning?
Yeah, see, so what happened was Mr. Black and Asian there, he had AJ Green, he had Jason Witten. So between that, that's 55 points right there. So I did not have a good week. I had Zach Sudfield, who gave me 0 points. I had Steven Ridley, who gave me 1 point. And I had Calvin Johnson, who had 2 touchdowns sort of taken away. So he only had 6 points. So I did not have a good week besides Peyton Manning's 51 points. So
not a good week for starting running backs.
Is there anything worse in the world than light skin on light skin violence? Shout out to Dennis Black and Asian. But let's talk about Peyton Manning for a little bit, because I was completely impressed by their performance. I mean, granted, it's only 1 week of the season, and we've seen Peyton Manning have success in the regular season before, but I thought that was a statement game Thursday night. And looking at how the Patriots did today, looking at how the Steelers floundered today, I think if I'm a betting man, I think the Denver Broncos would have to be the odds-on favorite right now to be the representative for the AFC in the Super Bowl.
And, of course, by betting man, you mean sucker, because I love this game that we play every single year, how great Peyton Manning looks in the regular season. Oh, he threw 7 touchdowns, and now they're going to the Super Bowl in September. Peyton Manning played very well, and he tore the Ravens up in September. Always remember how much better the NFL gets when all the good teams are in the playoffs and Peyton Manning has to go up against legit defenses. And always remember that he's 9-11 in the playoffs. Losing record in the playoffs, throws horrible interceptions. Wake me up when the weather gets cold and the teams get better and Manning gets tighter. Okay, I know this. I've seen this movie before. Peyton Manning and the Broncos look fantastic in September. Wake me up in February.
Yeah, and just the rain on Denver's parade there. Their run game looked awful. And, you know, it's great that Peyton Manning had these great numbers, but, you know, when it comes down to January, the run game needs to be a bigger factor. And they have these three running backs who they still don't know which one is the number one back. And of the three backs, neither one really looked that impressive. Knowshon Moreno got a lot of the carries. Ronnie Hillman was Rookie Monty Ball was decent, but he didn't really get a lot of snaps. So until they figure out this run game, eventually teams will figure out how to stop Peyton Manning and force them to run the ball, and then they have an issue.
See, I think y'all just mad that y'all don't have football on your phones.
I've got football on my phone. I just understand the perception and reality that is Peyton Manning. And, you know, Marcus, you bring up a good point about the running game, and I do think that Monte Ball eventually will emerge as a starter, and they do have talented backs who can work in that system as a feature back. But it's all going to come down to Peyton Manning and what he does in the playoffs. He has had monster games in the playoffs. Hell, last season against the Ravens, very good game until it got late and it mattered most, and he threw a terrible pick, and we've seen that far too many times. He's just, there's an exception to the rule year when he went to the playoffs and finally went to the Super Bowl and finally won it against the Bears, but more times than not, Peyton Manning flounders in the playoffs.
I'll tell you what I'm mad, by the way. I was in Vegas on Thursday, and I bet on the Ravens +7.5. Ooh. And I felt good at halftime. Ravens were up. I was like, all right, the Ravens got this. And then that play with Wes Welker, with the catch-non-catch situation there where Baltimore didn't challenge it, and the Nets played, Denver scored, and it was just a track meet from after that. So
yeah, that's okay. That's the right side of that game. I would have bet the 7.5 with the Ravens. I thought that was way too big of a number for an underdog who's coming off a Super Bowl year and really does have a good team. I know that they allowed a lot of points, but you got to realize it, or you got to think they're going to figure that out. So I thought that was the right side of the game too.
Now, was that a substantial bet, Brother Marcus, or was it, you know, just kind of funny money, you know what I'm saying, that you was throwing down at the table?
It was $100.
Okay, I was going to say, was it an amount that would have Marcus sleeping on the couch?
No.
like Marcus, you done spent up all the rent money betting on these damn Ravens and Joe Flacco.
No, I usually don't bet more than that, so no.
But what I was going to say is, you know, you talk about the running game, Marcus, that Denver lacks, and I would agree with that, but we've seen this blueprint, and it might not be a championship-winning blueprint, but it can be a conference-winning blueprint. You talk about the Peyton Manning and the Colts, and outside of Edgerrin James, can you really name a stud running back that they had over the years?
Joseph Addai.
One season.
He was strong. He
one
was very,
season.
Very strong for the Colts.
One
Let's
year.
Claim this on this is Peyton Manning's system. This is he's calling the plays. He's the one constructing this offense. They've had very good offensive lines. They've had loaded teams on offense and defense. There was a season where they went 13-0, I believe, and their defense was just as good, if not better, than their offense, and they still lost in the first round to the Steelers. In their first game to the Steelers. So people always make excuses for Peyton Manning and how well it's not his fault. The Broncos defense allowed this huge play to Jacoby Jones. Okay, yeah, but then why did Peyton Manning throw that horrible interception across his body? It's because when the moment gets big, he's never really been that good. In college, he could never beat Florida, and he never won a national championship. And then you get to the NFL, and he's had the same struggles aside from one Super Bowl year.
Did you say Peyton Manning is not that good?
I said when the moment gets big, he's not that good. Peyton Manning's great in the regular season on SportsCenter, and when he's playing terrible defenses, and when he's playing defenses that are in disarray because a lot of starters and two Hall of Famers left. Oh, of course Peyton Manning looks great in September against that team at home, but as the season goes on and the competition gets stiffer and the lights get a little bit brighter, the guy sweats.
Who else in the AFC do you have, though? I mean, we saw New England.
I don't know. Did you have the Ravens last year?
New England looked pedestrian against E.J. Manuel and the Bills. The Steelers looked anemic against the Tennessee Titans. I mean, who else is going to jump up and surprise us?
In the Patriots Super Bowl year, in their second Super Bowl, they lost 31-0 in the first week of the season to the Buffalo Bills. Let's not get carried away with week one. And I have the Cincinnati Bengals. I think that's a team that if they get hot at the right time, they can beat Peyton Manning in the first round and go to the Super Bowl.
That's because you love Marvin Lewis.
I like the Cincinnati Bengals team right now. I'll defend Marvin Lewis. I don't love him.
No, you love him. You love him. We've had this conversation.
I love him.
You say he's a top five coach.
I do think he's a top five
That's
coach.
That's love. That's irrational love.
Your boy, John Harbaugh. This is coach. This is where people get good rosters mixed up with good coaching. He lost 10 starters on his roster, and that team looked horrible, and they got blown out, allowed 49 points. Where's the coaching? That's where the coach comes out. Let's admit it. John Harbaugh, good coach, but he walked into a situation where he had two Hall of Famers on his defense. Doesn't have them anymore, and now look at what they did. This is where the coaching is going to come into play. I know it's just week one, but we're going to see over the course of multiple weeks what he does.
Like I asked you earlier, how many wins does Marvin Lewis have in the playoffs? How many?
Are we going to be that narrow-minded? Okay,
yeah, if you're going to rip Peyton Manning's playoff record, you got to look at Marvin Lewis. How many wins does Marvin Lewis have in the playoffs?
Okay, but Marvin Lewis is the coach. And let me tell you about Marvin Lewis. What other coach can go through what he went through? Let's look at it in perspective. He lost his franchise quarterback in Carson Palmer, who got injured and then queened out. He lost his franchise wide receiver in Chad Johnson, who went crazy. He lost his franchise running back in Corey Dillon, who left after his first year. And he was able to rebuild that team. You put any other coach in that situation, and 90% of them get fired. Go tell Mike Tomlin, hey, Mike Tomlin, you're going to be playing the next five seasons without Ben Roethlisberger. Tell that to Tom Coughlin. All these coaches that you exalt, they all had the same franchise quarterback in a quarterback league. Marvin Lewis turned over that roster over and over, and he's rebuilt them not once but twice. When he came into Cincinnati, they were a mess. He rebuilt them into a contender. He lost all that elite talent. He's rebuilt them again into a contender. That is where the coaching comes in, not the roster, the coaching.
And the answer would be zero, by the way, because you didn't answer the question. Zero wins in the playoffs.
Well, give you that. That's a slice of the pie. We're talking about coaching in a whole perspective. You want to talk about coaching? Okay, if he would have had Carson Palmer, who when he was in his prime and he was healthy, was among one of the top three or four quarterbacks in the league, if he would have had that Carson Palmer and Chad Johnson right to this point, without having to go through all this mess, do you think that he would have at least had one playoff game, a win? Of course he would have. But we have to look at the situation.
Zero wins. Mm. And not only that, back-to-back losses to Houston. Like, Houston is not exactly...
one of the top season playoffs. The only team that beat them were the Patriots.
Nobody is really believing Houston.
Okay, it's okay, but the Houston is a top team. They've got Arian Foster. They've got a lot of elite talent. They're one of the deeper teams in the league. And Marvin's time is coming. If you want to let this boil down to the playoffs, go right ahead. But that is unfair when you're looking at Marvin Lewis's tenure with Cincinnati. He has been amazing. In a league where you get fired on the dime, this guy has been in situations where any other coach would have been fired. Jeff Fisher lost Vince Young, who's a nutcase, and he wasn't able to recover from that. Marvin Lewis lost, it's as if Marvin Lewis lost Vince Young, Chris Johnson, and, Kadeem Britt's never right, so that never matters. But he's lost so many franchise players and been able to recover it. That's where the coaching comes in, not the roster. You can talk about the playoff wins. That's where the coaching comes in.
Yeah.
Is it not?
Get back to me when he wins a playoff game.
Okay, I will, and that will complete the pie. I've got Marvin Lewis way ahead of John Harbaugh right now.
Okay. All right.
Tenure matters.
I get Marvin his props, you know what I'm saying, for the longevity, especially being a black head coach.
Who do you think is better? Okay, I want both of you. Who do you guys, let's brainstorm. Who's better than Marvin Lewis?
Currently.
We did this brainstorm already. We did this offline.
Let's do it again.
Belichick, of course.
Okay, I'll give you Belichick.
Coughlin.
Okay, I'll give you Coughlin. All right, he's had the same quarterback, and he's been through a lot. I'll give you Coughlin, too, because he's got 2 Super Bowls.
How generous of you to give this guy who has two Super Bowls over zero playoff wins.
That's 2 coaches better in 32. In a 32-coach league, we've got 2 coaches better than Marvin Lewis. Who else? Are we going to go Mike Tomlin? Because the Steelers have eroded every year. If you haven't noticed, the Steelers have begun to erode now that he has to start coaching a little bit more and turning over that roster. They look like a mess this past week.
Even though I hate how he handled Michael Vick, I'll say Andy Reid overall better coach than
I would too. Marvin Lewis. I would say Andy Reid is a great coach too.
Sean Payton.
Better than Marvin Lewis. I don't know about Sean Payton. I would put him on the same plane as Marvin Lewis. We're not going to just award Super Bowls and say that's the only thing. And I think Sean Payton
isn't last year an example enough of Sean Payton's coaching? You take Sean Payton away.
He was the New Orleans Saints, but essentially there's only about 5 or 6 coaches that you can reasonably argue are better than Marvin Lewis. Makes him a top 10 coach, a top 7 coach in a freaking 32 coach league. How is that not being one of the best coaches, especially given his tenure?
And as I told you, we're talking about a league that has nearly half the coaches have less than 2 years' experience. So, yes, he should be in the upper echelon of coaches.
Why do less than half the coaches, why do so many coaches have that little experience? Because it's so common to get fired. And if you're able to stay so long in a league where it's so common to get fired, that makes you one of the best. That means you're doing something right.
Who wants to coach in Cincinnati? Come on.
Use that as well. Nobody else wants the job, so we're just gonna let Marvin stay around. That's not how it works over there in Paul Brown Stadium. People in Ohio, that is a football town. There's a lot of people who love the coach in Cincinnati.
Then he should have been fired after 2010 season, correct?
No, he should not have, because they obviously saw his talent. And everybody goes through that season or two where they have a little bit of a slump with the rebuilding.
And that was called 2008, 2010. Okay.
He was on a forward-looking trail, and he said they've obviously made the right decision because he's rebuilt them into a contender that has been to the playoffs the past 2 years, despite all the train wreck and messes that they've been through.
I will say Marvin got the benefit of a doubt on a couple of occasions, because there were at least 2 times that he should have been fired justifiably in the NFL, because of his contractual status, the Cincinnati Bengals was like, hey, we ain't paying for another coach. We're going to do this the cheap way, and they kept Marvin. But to Marvin's credit, like Albert said, he did rebuild that squad. I will give him props as one of the 10 best coaches in the league, but to try to say, he's better than Sean Payton or...
I didn't say he's better than Sean Payton. I'm saying that there's only a small handful of coaches that are better, which makes him one of the best coaches. He's underrated because everybody's going to put way too much stock in playoff wins and whatnot, but there's more to coaching than coming onto a roster that's really good.
Playoff wins, because that's what's important, playoff wins.
It's very important, but we got to look at coaching in a whole realm. There's more to coaching than just winning playoff games and walking onto a roster that's loaded like Jim Harbaugh did. There's more to coaching than winning with other people's players. There's a long-term aspect. Hey, what if we take away your franchise quarterback? How are you going to coach that team? Hey, what if we take away your franchise running back? How are you going to coach that team? Where are the variables? Look at the quarterbacks that are winning. Drew Brees and Sean Payton, okay? Ben Roethlisberger and Mike Tomlin. Tom Coughlin and Eli Manning. Okay, you notice a consistency here?
Rhett's Ryan, Mark Sanchez. I mean, come on. I mean, the dude, Rhett's Ryan, Mark Sanchez. Hello?
Yeah, and that's why Rhett's Ryan's going to get fired this year, is because he's not that great of a coach, because as the Jets' tenure went on, he walked onto a team that's very good, and as the tenure went on and the coaching became important, what happened? The Jets eroded.
The Jets eroded because their talent eroded. They didn't replace the talent around Rhett's Ryan.
Is that not part of coaching?
Is he supposed to go out and sign players as well?
Even if the talent, you can say all you want about the talent. That's the same excuse you could have about the Cincinnati Bengals. Is that what from Carson Palmer in his prime to Andy Dalton? Is that not talent? Is that not a talent gap and a deficiency from these quarterbacks? No. But if Marvin Lewis was a great coach, which he is, he would be able to coach that entire roster regardless of talent deficiency. And that's something Rex Ryan was unable to do.
Lewis didn't do in 2010. He didn't – what was he coaching in 2010?
It's a long-term process, and Rex Ryan is already worn out his welcome because he's not that good of a coach and everybody can see it. Nobody was saying that about Marvin Lewis because they knew he was a good coach.
Hey, Rex got to win this week, though.
Look at the team that Marvin Lewis walked onto. It's like everybody's giving all these coaches, okay, but there's so much talent, a lot of teams. The Cincinnati Bengals were the L.A. Clippers when Marvin Lewis arrived, and he made them into a contender. Is that not good coaching? The New York Jets had so much talent when Rex Ryan got there.
And he won with that talent when he got there.
Exactly.
He didn't screw
And is
up.
That
Come
the
on.
Roster or is that the coaching?
That's
the fact
no.
that now he's losing. You got to be able to coach, baby. Bill Belichick lost Tom Brady. And he's like, look, that's where coaching comes in.
Have you seen the Jets roster?
The Jets won today.
Have you seen the Jets roster?
Yeah, it's not a very good roster, but whose fault is that? Are we not going to absolve Rex Ryan? Okay, you have a bad roster. Coach, this is where your coaching comes in. You can't just depend on 110% talent. You got to work as a team. You got to have a system in place. Okay, we've seen what Matt Cassel is. We've seen what Matt Cassel is on the Kansas City Chiefs. When Bill Belichick was entrusted to take that quarterback who's below average and replace Tom Brady, he did it with no problem. They went 11-5. Okay, that's coaching. We're not zeroing in on playoff wins. That's coaching. You got to be able to coach. What's the most important position in the NFL? It's quarterback. Is it not?
You done?
I just asked a simple question. Well, if you're done, I've got plenty left in the tank.
It's going to be this kind of show, Alfred.
Marvin Lewis, top 10 coach, one of the best in the NFL, and when he wins the Super Bowl this year, I'm not going to brag. I'm not going to say this. I've always read about the NFL.
I will agree Marvin Lewis is a top 10 coach, but
Good for him.
So then I win. Because that's all I was arguing.
You win more than Marvin Lewis probably, so go ahead.
You said he was a bad coach.
I didn't say he was a bad coach. I said...
Stop it. He's not one of the best coaches. I will read what you said. You said he was not one of the best coaches, and that is abject BS.
He's not one of the top coaches in the league. You wouldn't take
How
him over.
How can he be a top 7 coach and not be one of the top coaches in the league?
He's not a top 7 coach.
But all your arguments are about playoff wins, and the NFL is about getting to the playoffs, really. If you get to the playoffs, you can be considered an elite coach. Maybe if you don't win playoff games, okay, that's when your legacy comes into question. But you have to, given what Marvin Lewis has done and how he's won in a place that was so defined by losing, he is an elite coach. This is not Marvin Lewis walking onto the New York Jets. This is not Marvin Lewis walking onto a team that already had a franchise quarterback. This is Marvin Lewis rebuilding and rebuilding and rebuilding and doing a great job.
I'm sorry, Podcast Row, for this conversation about Marvin Lewis. I know you guys are pretty bored of this.
Apologizing for the fact that
this is the most exposure Marvin Lewis has had in his entire career?
He deserves it. And maybe if he did get more exposure and the national media wasn't in bed with people like Peyton Manning and the Sizzle, maybe he would be considered one of those elite coaches. But people who watch ESPN, they all think, oh, yeah, it's all about Peyton Manning. There's like 3 coaches and 3 quarterbacks in the league. It's not, okay? The Ravens won the Super Bowl last year, for Christ's sakes.
Now you blaming the media.
I am blaming the media, the national media.
All right, we'll find someone from the national media to come on, and we can talk about Marvin Lewis and about how great he is.
We'll get somebody from the Cincinnati Inquirer, and we'll have a big discussion about Marvin Lewis.
Ugh.
So,
pretty much like that.
Oh, we're going to leave the NFL there because I really, like, I was so excited to talk about the NFL. But after the past 7 minutes, I'm kind of good with the NFL for right now.
About Marvin Lewis, final note, Marcus Vandenberg, he's not one of the best coaches. Stop. Just saying.
But we'll do some quick college football hits right quick. And there was some big games over this past weekend. And, you know, you had Georgia, South Carolina. You had Oregon stomp a mud hole in Virginia. And probably my favorite game of the weekend, BYU versus Texas, and Mark Morrison's favorite coach, return of the Mac Brown, getting a little heat for that game. What did you guys think about the college football weekend, in particular that BYU-Texas game?
Marcus?
That was, wow. I've seen some bad defense performances in college football, but when you give up 550 yards to a school in the state of Utah, to a quarterback named Taysom Hill, who on paper, I was like, oh, this dude must be black, despite the BYU thing. But then I flipped on his stint, and I was like, this is a white boy who ran for 259 yards and 3 touchdowns against Texas. Wow. You know, Matt Brown said earlier this year that he was planning on coaching until 2020. But after yesterday's performance, it might be into 2013. They fired their defensive coordinator today.
Manny Diaz?
Yeah, he got the
Manny
boot.
Manny Diaz.
So he got the boot for that loss. And
the third Diaz brother.
Greg Robinson, former coach, is now coming in to take over the defense. But, yeah, Texas, you know, luckily for Texas, it wasn't the most embarrassing loss of the weekend because that probably goes to USC for their pathetic effort against Washington State. But, you know, I guess the good thing about Texas is Oklahoma looked just as pathetic on offense against West Virginia. So, you know, that's their big thing. If they can, you know, beat Oklahoma, then that's half their season right there. So there's still a shot for them to beat the Sooners, but it doesn't look good for the guys down in Austin.
I mean, if they had a Marvin Lewis coaching, I'm sure they would have won, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course. Well, if they were a mess, Marvin Lewis is your guy. Even if they had a loaded roster, they probably win a national championship before anything else. But that's another story. Listen, it's been a terrible week for Mac Brown. It couldn't have gotten any worse. The writing is already on the wall. You had that story come out about the stud Florida State redshirt freshman quarterback, Winston, who had a great game. And then it just came out that Mac Brown dropped the ball maybe recruiting this kid. And from that to this game and Texas getting blown out, it looks like the game has passed Mac Brown by. And he is just a sitting duck. I think even if they do beat Oklahoma, I don't think Mac Brown is coaching Texas by the end of this year.
Wow.
I wouldn't go that far, but yeah, I do think, like Marcus mentioned, they do need to beat Oklahoma, and they do need to string together some impressive victories in order for Mac to keep his spot. But, I mean, Texas is a juggernaut. I mean, they are legitimately one of the 3 or 4 biggest schools in the country in terms of, you know, they got their own network, the marketing, the reach that they have. So for the football team to go down like this over the weekend at BYU, that is a big blemish on that school. But Alfred mentioned Florida, you know, talking about Jameis Winston at Florida State. The big news that I took part in, you know, that I watched and I enjoyed and had a couple Steve Weisers too. So it was probably my favorite game of the weekend because I went through a 12-pack during the game.
Full disclosure.
Was Miami taking on Florida. And it wasn't the prettiest.
Wait, hold on. Time out. That game started at fucking 12 o'clock. What are you doing drinking 12 beers at noon?
Hey.
It's all right. Saturday.
I ain't got no worries. Why are you hating, Marcus?
I'm just saying.
Drinking is so fun. Have you ever day drank, Marcus?
No.
Day drinking is very fun. I will say that. Day drinking is very fun. I mean, like, if you got the day off, you ain't got nothing to do. All you got to do is stay at home and watch football in your drawers and drink beer.
That's full disclosure.
A little actually, too much disclosure.
Actually, it's partial disclosure, but who's counting? But let's back on track. Florida and Miami. Florida, I expected bigger things from them this season. But Miami, man, you gotta give a tip of the cap to them. They came out, played a physical game. It wasn't pretty, but I really enjoyed what I saw from the Hurricanes, Marcus.
Yeah, I missed this game. I wasn't at home in my draws. I was actually driving back from Vegas. But for Al Golden and the program.
Don't hate that you can't live like this, baby.
Nah, I'm good. you know, for the program, this was a huge win. It's supposed to be the last time they're facing Florida for a while. So they got one last win in on the Gators. And, you know, Miami's up to number 15 in the polls. And this is the first step in the right direction for Miami. This could be a season where they finish in the top 10. And you get Florida State later on in the year, which will be a great matchup between the Seminoles and Jameis Winston and Miami. So we might finally see the return of the U.
Yeah, we didn't have a proper college football preview show, but if we would have, I would have been bullish on the Miami Hurricanes, and I was going to say that everybody's saying Alabama and Ohio State are going to end up in the championship game, and everybody expects Alabama to win, but I was going to say that Miami is a team that you really should be on the lookout for as a dark horse, either Miami or Clemson, and I just don't trust Clemson in big games. I just feel like they're going to shoot themselves in the foot somewhere down the stretch, but Miami's a team I look at like this could be a Sugar Bowl team. This could be a team that makes it a national title game. It sneaks up on everybody.
That seemed real convenient that you were going to predict Miami having a big season if we did a show 2 weeks ago.
I've been saying it. I've been bullish on the Miami Hurricanes. I can pull up screenshots from social media if you guys don't believe me.
Yeah, I think he got the bull part right, Marcus.
Can I dip my door first then?
Yeah.
I'm going Northwestern.
Northwestern.
Okay. And for this reason, there are two big games. Ohio State and Michigan are both at Northwestern. You know, it's going to take a school from a major conference to get in the mix for the BCS title game. And, you know, they're coming off a season where they won 10 games. Of their losses, I think all their losses were either 7 points or less. So they hunt tough. And I'm going Northwestern. So,
if you saw what Michigan looked like this past week against Notre Dame, Devin Garner and Jeremy Gallen are no joke. So that could be a tougher test than it looks like on paper.
Yeah, we'll see. Ohio, if they can get by Ohio State, then that I think will open some eyes. That's October 5th. So we'll see how Bradson Miller is feeling and what their shot is like at Evanston.
Yeah, I'm pulling for Northwestern too. Just for the fact that if they have some success, maybe Marcus can pull some strings and we can talk to Uncle Wilbon on the show.
Yeah, I don't know Wilbon personally. We could probably get a Don Day, but I don't know Wilbon.
Hey, we'll take a Don. I'm a fan of Jay and Don Day. As long as he's not drinking and calling people out of their names at black journalism conferences.
That wasn't him. That was There goes the invite. That's silly. You messed it up.
Like, damn, now we got to go to Pablo Torres. Oh, yeah, it's going to be that kind of show, everybody. It's going to be that kind of show. So, yeah, it was a big weekend, both in the NFL and in college. I'm really looking forward to next week. Like I said, my fantasy team, I had three teams in fantasy. I won two leagues this week. Unfortunately, I did not win in the Briscoe Sanders Football League powered by the Kings of Sports. But we'll hope.
But you won your other leagues.
Well, yeah.
This is the only league that you lost in. The ones that we can't see, you won in those leagues, is what you're saying.
It's probably because I didn't have Marvin Lewis as my coach. But, yeah, so we big NFL week next week. The Manning – is it Manning Bowl 3 or Manning Bowl 4?
I believe it's 4.
4.
Is it 4?
Or 3 or 4, I can't remember.
Yeah, we'll definitely –
Either way, Eli hasn't won yet, so.
It's yeah. 3.
Yeah, Manning Bowl 3, and I don't see Eli winning this one either, as good as the Broncos look. So
I think the Giants are going to be a great underdog pick this week in Vegas. I'll have to do my research, but – national TV blowout, usually teams are sitting ducks the week after. I love the Giants as an underdog right now.
And Giants are at home.
And you just want to go back to Vegas so you can see those Cougars again.
Hey, don't call out my attention. That might be some of it, but, you know, the Cougars.
You just want to watch the game in your drawers with the Cougars. So we're going to leave it right there for segment one.
Real quick, prediction for next week, Alabama, Texas A&M.
Oh, and a big programming note for next week, T.J. McClune will be making his return to the show next week.
T.J.!
To discuss the fallout from the Alabama-Texas A&M game. But I am going to go with, because I dislike Johnny Football so much, I'm going with Bama and A.J. McCarron for the win.
I'm going with Bama. I think it's a competitive game. I think it's a high-scoring game, and Bama pulls away late, wins by about 10.
A&M. Get him.
Wow.
Marcus stays flip-flopping with Johnny Football.
When was I flip-flopping? I say he's an asshole, he's in a jerk, but he's still a talented jerk. I still support him.
You are like Johnny Football is Chris Brown and you are Rihanna. You just never can say goodbye. But we are going to say goodbye for this segment. That's it for the A-Block. We got a lot of stuff in store for this week's program. We got Timmy D from Anarchy Wrestling coming up on the program. And, of course, the always exciting and informative segment for us. So stick and stay. More Kings of Sport right after the break.
We've always said the Kings of Sport was the best podcast around, but now the reviews are in and the people have spoken. Here's what you had to say about the show. This is a sports podcast for the people, by the people. There are no old guys talking about the good old days. These are brothers that are connected to what's going on now. They bring you the latest information as well as comparing current events to historical ones. If there is one sports podcast that you need to listen to, make it this one. This is a very good show with three brilliant co-hosts who keep it real. Younger guys with great minds for sports. They have differing opinions and back it up with facts and figures. Always entertaining and an enjoyable listen. I am down with the Kings. The Kings of Sport is the best thing going on the internet. These guys rock. Give them a listen. You won't be disappointed. So there you have it. But you don't have to take their word for it. Find out for yourself. Listen to the Kings of Sport and make up your own mind. We guarantee we're the best show around. And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
And we are back on the Kings of Sport, powered by Place to Be Nation. Go to PlaceToBeNation.com. It is your one-stop spot for the latest in pop culture, movies, music, wrestling, sports, gaming, and so much more. PlaceToBeNation.com. And it is that time once again, each and every week, we like to bring you the latest news, stories, opinions, and insight in the world of professional wrestling in a segment we like to call the Ringside Wrap. And unfortunately, I'm riding solo today. Marcus and Alfred are detained at the job, so I got to be the one man, the lone wolf, if you will, but I'm not going to be like AJ Styles and grow a beard and get drunk. Instead, what I'm going to do is make the hot tag to a special guest joining us for the entire segment this week. And this gentleman is a pro wrestling crown jewel of Cable Cup winner. He's a TV host. He's been on WWE and Anarchy Pro Wrestling, and he doesn't like ankle socks. It's Tim Letter E, period D. Timmy D, what's going on, brother?
Hey, what a great introduction. I tell you, you got that correct. My name is Tim, letter E, period D, and if you're my friend, you already know that. And we are friends, and you did know that, so there you go.
And we already starting off on the right foot.
I know. I love that introduction you gave also with all the different things that your show covers. It's like, I think the only thing you left out was beach towels. It's like you pretty much literally cover every, if it's on television, you guys talk about it. It's amazing. It was, what a great show it sounds like.
Yeah, if we can find something to make fun of or to find a different take on it, we will discuss it. I think a couple shows ago we spent probably 10 minutes talking about Miley Cyrus. So.
Oh, yes, the twerking queen herself.
Yes.
I'm still trying to figure out exactly what a twerk is. It's like little by little, though, I learn it gets into my vernacular, which is kind of scary, to be honest. I'm actually twerking right now as I do this interview. I don't even know what that means, but I'm doing it.
Yeah, now you can't get that image out of your mind.
Yes, that's for sure. I think it involves Ziploc bags somehow and putting different lunch meats in it. If that's the case, then I'm twerking.
All right, we'll work that out. But, you know, I've been talking with Timmy, full disclosure, you know, kind of behind the scenes. I've been talking with Timmy via social media for a couple weeks now, and definitely been interested in getting this guy on the show to give his unique take on not only the WWE, who has Night of Champions coming up, not only TNA, who has the No Surrender, used to be a pay-per-view, now it's a TV special coming up this week. But before we get into that, you know, for the fans out there that may not know who you are, Timmy, I want you to let the people know, you know, first of all, when you got started becoming a fan of professional wrestling, what are some of the organizations you followed growing up? And also, how did you get into the broadcasting aspect of pro wrestling?
Well, I actually, you know, followed it since, probably like 87, something along those lines. And I was always an NWA guy, National Wrestling Alliance. And then, you know, I would follow the WWF at the time as well, too. I liked both, but I was always more of the NWA guy. And I guess mainly, too, because they came around us for a while. WWF at the time didn't come around Raleigh, North Carolina, which is where I'm originally from. And so it was easier to always have an NWA show there. So there, you know, just went to one show, loved it, and then would go back and watch it on TV. Couldn't wait for the time where they would announce that they're coming back to the local area again and go back out. And there was this cycle again continuing. So as I got older, which kind of ties in with the broadcasting realm of things, I just knew that somehow I wanted to get involved with wanting to eventually be the play-by-play guy, and then from NWA going to WCW, which when it kind of merged, wanted to go work for WCW in the Atlanta area. And interestingly enough, usually when people have a dream, they want to accomplish the dream, but just because you have the dream doesn't mean the time you finally get there it's going to take the exact same shape. And I certainly can attest to that because I wound up moving to Atlanta, which is where WCW was, but WCW went out of business, and I also wound up becoming the play-by-play guy for NWA Anarchy, so it wasn't WCW, but it was for NWA, which is a branch of it. So I got two out of the three of my dreams, so you can't complain there. So again, it just shows you, you can reach a dream, but when you get there, it may not exactly take the exact shape, because who would have thought, hey, this company's going to go out of business? But I'm just happy that I got to at least succeed and being pretty close to the pretty much the exact dream that I wanted. It was national television, which is what we were on. We're on the AMG network and got to do play-by-play for pro wrestling. So, yeah, I'm pretty content and pretty happy.
You know, and we'll kind of make that's the natural segue right there. You talk about WCW going out of business, and two of the men that most people would claim responsible for putting that company out of business are in charge of TNA. And they have had some interesting times over the past month or so. And another kind of connection is a lot of the Anarchy guys ended up, you know, working for TNA at some point.
Yep, you're absolutely correct on that. I know it's amazing how many people have come through the Anarchy roster to go on to other things, because Fandango actually was one of the people that came through Anarchy. You also had Consequences Creed, and AJ Styles actually lived and originally from, like, right up near Cornelia, Georgia area, which is where Anarchy's based. And now, you know, he's a big guy. I know you referenced him earlier in the introduction. So, yeah, so many different people. Also got Gunner, who's there now, one half of the tag team champions for TNA. So definitely a lot of people that have come through there, and it's really great to see, you know, everyone that's gone on to different things.
You know,
yeah, I mean, that's one thing, too, you referenced about Bischoff and Hogan, you know, I'm assuming two of the people there. in talking about the downfall of WCW, and just kind of in my opinion, obviously there were so many different elements that I think brought it down. And, you know, for all the negative that everyone looks into for Bischoff, it's like you got to give him a lot of credit because he was one of the few people, to my knowledge, that actually kept WCW in the black for a while and actually making a profit. And, you know, he had so many great ideas. It's like there is no be-all, end-all, you know, for certainly for professional wrestling. Vince McMahon did a lot of great things as well, too, but now you look at some of the negatives that I also think he's done. So I always think that no matter what entertainment side of things you're on, it takes a really great team. And everything you try isn't always going to work, but, you know, at least we had a room that it seems like WWE doesn't have formidable competition the way they used to have for the Monday Night Wars.
Yeah, one of the things I always give Bischoff credit for is in terms of the production and the television aspect of professional wrestling. You know,
yeah.
With Nitro, he kind of revolutionized the way that wrestling was presented in North America. So, you know, you can't take that away from Eric Bischoff. You know, you can argue in terms of some of the booking decisions or some of the people that they chose to push or sign those contracts to back in the day. But, you know, there's good and bad with every person, especially in the wrestling industry.
Yeah, and you know, one of my like all-time favorite wrestling books that I've actually read, and I mean, I keep rereading it. It's a really great blueprint and really good insight into someone that's a TV personality, an executive, and just the industry itself, which is Eric Bischoff's book that he did while he was with WWE. And some of the stuff, you know, he talks about just how his blueprint to create Nitro and some of the ideas, and I absolutely agree. And I mean, to be honest, that's a lot of what I think is lacking with WWE right now, because one of the things that Bischoff kind of wanted was you know, a lot of surprises, a lot of just to keep you on your toes, make you wonder. And unfortunately, it seems like both promotions sometimes can get kind of predictable. And, you know, you kind of bring in some of the baggage that, you know, from the past that kind of hurts you. And one of my things just from rereading the book that I think might have been a better help, it would be a good lesson for anyone, is to not have really a wrestler that is a current active roster also be your booker. It seemed like that was one of the big negatives with having Kevin Nash as a booker, but also having a self-serving interest. And, you know, a lot of people can certainly remember that with Dusty Rhodes back in the day, being the booker while also being the wrestler, same with Ric Flair. It's like you always seem to be putting yourself up top, and it almost seems like you have a self-serving interest. But if you have someone that can't gain really anything, you know, besides just only being a booker, then I think that would be a better scenario maybe to help.
Right, and you know, speaking of booking, TNA, as we mentioned, has gone through a lot of changes and upheaval over the past couple of months, and you know, Bruce Pritchard being removed from his position, Al Snow took over some of the booking duties, but now it's more of a booking by committee situation. And one of the more interesting things is this happened right around the Bound for Glory series, which is always one of TNA's more focused events, and last year I thought they executed it perfectly. This year, it was uneven at best.
Yeah.
To say the least. I was in Norfolk a couple weeks ago when AJ Styles made the face turn, and that played beautifully in the crowd, and I think it came across well on TV. Then they followed that up in Cleveland with AJ cutting the promo, and I think it really didn't set the right tone for this guy. You know, he's in the Final Four of the Bound for Glory series along with Bobby Roode, Magnus, and Austin Aries. So I think you've got the potential for some great matches. But in terms of a storyline aspect, do you think AJ is going to be the guy that wins the Bound for Glory series? And how do you see this character kind of catching hold with the audience?
Yeah, you know, he definitely has a lot of potential. Of course, the book coming out, I don't know if it's out now or is about to be coming out, which is kind of being led in some involvement with Bill Behrens, who's also one of the big ringleaders for us at Anarchy. So like, it's funny how it all ties in again. But I really think like the evolution of AJ's character and on-air presence really seems to be taking a hold, and I definitely see like really a lot of great things coming from him. And I think it's about time too. I think a lot of the fans have been wanting it, and you know, sometimes you hit or miss with a segment, and that doesn't always mean though that's got to be the end. So I think they really should keep pushing it for him, and it seems like that is going to be the case, at least in my opinion. So when you said Norfolk, were they doing a show up at the Scope, or was it somewhere a little smaller arena?
It was at the Ted Constant Convocation Center at ODU.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I have a lot of good memories with the Scope and WCW rolling through. Actually, the first pay-per-view I ever went to as a fan was 91. I think it was Starcade. I think it was their first Battle Bowl, if I remember correctly. So I thought, how awesome was that? So Scope always has a little place in my heart up in Virginia, Norfolk area.
Yeah, and it was a really hot crowd. I mean, I think we've seen over and over again when TNA goes to these areas that really haven't been serviced by the WWE, that really, yep, you know, maybe only get a big show once a year. When TNA goes into these areas, the crowds are usually hot. I believe, you know, the Constance Center holds 9,000 for the configuration they had to set up in. And I would say that there are at least 5,000 people there, which, you know, for TNA, that's a pretty good crowd.
That's true. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree with what you're saying. And that's my philosophy and thinking, too. And that's kind of what, you know, WCW did for a while. Like, their house shows were doing horrible. They really built up their TV product really big. And then when the product got bigger, then they were able to go back into bigger venues again. And you're right. And that's one thing that I think helped WCW, too, at the time, was smaller venues that, you know, WWE wasn't going into at the time, and like a market that isn't being serviced. And you're absolutely correct. Your opinion, do you ever see, I guess, TNA ever being able to kind of get over that threshold? Because it always seems like their ratings are always pulling in a 1 point something or less, and they did the head-to-head, which in some ways at least maybe got them a little bit of attention, but obviously hurt the ratings worse. And they've had a lot of really good talent in. Do you have any opinions of what you think could really turn it around?
Honestly, I think TNA needs to make itself appointment viewing. And it's going to be hard this time of year with the NFL and, you know, that competition on Thursday nights. But I do think there is an audience that wants to watch wrestling and that they may not be interested in the WWE product, but they just don't know about TNA. You know, they've got about a million fans that will tune in and week out, no matter how good or how bad the shows are, but they're not building that audience. And I think a lot of the blame in terms of building that audience, and, you know, it's easy to kind of take shots at this guy because he's one, like, the internet wrestling community's punching bag, and that's Hulk Hogan. I'm not one of those guys that just arbitrarily hates on Hogan, but I do have a problem with him making the money that he makes from Spike and from Impact Wrestling, and he does nothing in terms of promotion. You know, he's still
absolutely great. I absolutely agree with you because it drives me nuts. Like, if he'll get some publicity, even during the, I don't know if TNA would have wanted any of the publicity during the sex tape fiasco, but all I could think about is all the shows he was going on, and it's like, and then there was other times, I think he did American Idol or one of the big national shows, and I don't think TNA even got mentioned. And it's like, you're paying this guy, he can't really wrestle right now, so it's like you're paying him for his name, you're paying him for the publicity he generates, but yet it doesn't seem like when he's away from the TNA building that he's generating it really for TNA. And you and I think, are on the same page because I don't have a problem with him per se, but it's like, I don't feel like, no matter who it is, for the money that he's probably getting, they're getting really the return that they need for the money that a small organization is pumping into him that may be better suited elsewhere for that money. And one of the big problems I think would help them would be just some more publicity, like whether it's, you know, advertisement for a show coming up. You know, that's one thing that I always thought was cool back in the day with NWA/WCW for their Clash of the Champions. You know, they would do a really big time event, you know, every so often during the year. They would maybe put it in the TV guide. So it was an opportunity, if you weren't a regular weekly follower, to kind of get hooked to a big show, carry it into your TV show, also your pay-per-view coming up. And I feel like that's kind of one thing that TNA isn't really doing, that they need to get some new eyeballs maybe checking out their product.
Man, we've seen, you know, the couple of occasions where they've done, like, Destination X on free TV, where they've done the last one they did, the Hardcore Justice. You know, they had a little bit of bump in the ratings, but they're still not that, you know, you connect the WWE to USA.
Right.
You know where to go each and every week. But for TNA, unless you're a fan, you know, and you're just hearing these letters and you know, seeing clips of AJ Styles or Samoa Joe on the internet, there's no network identity, you know, in terms of, oh, they're on Spike TV each and every Thursday, you know, and, you know, TNA's got a lot to blame with that. Spike has some of the blame in terms of the way they've moved them around and shifting them up to 8 o'clock and then back to 9 o'clock and some of those things. But I do think that the next year or so, because I believe the Spike contract goes through the fall.
Okay. Like
the next year or so is going to be very crucial for TNA because not only do they have to show that they're not a money pit, you know, from the Panda Energy side, not only do they have to kind of make some stars, you know, guys like AJ and Aries and Magnus is a guy who I think they can really build the promotion around. They've got to make their own stars and not worry about bringing in these guys from the WWE. And I think the third thing that they've got to do is they have to have a hook. You know, they can't beat the WWE at their own game.
Exactly, and that's one of the things that I remember before Nitro got started, Bischoff basically said, at least according to his book, was, well, we can't be better than them. Do we be equal to them, or we be different to them? And it's like, you don't want to be less than them, and you can't beat them, so he tried to be different than them. And that was one thing, actually, I give TNA a little credit at the time, you know, for doing the different size ring, you know, they were doing. That kind of set them apart. And another thing, at least giving WWE credit, I think they got a little bit of attention when they were doing the whole Tea Party angle with Jack Swagger. And the one thing that's impressive with that is, you know, that was something that was going on currently in the real world. And it's like, I think whenever WWE used to be able to do stuff like that, like when something would really happen, and then next week, like with the Bret Hart incident, and then immediately turn it into something like a storyline and people would tune in. And I think that's one thing that's kind of missing with TNA is it's always the same kind of stuff every week, and they do the same old, this organization is going to come in to take over the company kind of business. It's like that storyline's been played out so much, but, you know, I think the Tea Party thing got a lot of credit for WWE and attention because it was taking something in a real-life scenario, something that was different that hadn't really been done, and then getting publicity. If TNA could do that, they could actually start getting some people checking out their product, not to mention, you know, if they could get Hogan off on some of these shows, actually kind of helping get TNA's name out there a little more. Like, you know, they might be able to turn it around a little. And I don't know how much money they're bleeding from doing the live event, so I'm sure that's probably not helping too much at the moment.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, having some of those angles that stand out and getting away from all these faction storylines. I think, you know, some of the hardcore fans might not have liked the angle, but the ratings didn't lie. And when they were doing the deal with AJ Styles and Dixie Carter, before, you know, it kind of veered off into the Claire Lynch territory, but when it was just kind of the angle where Daniels and Kaz were saying AJ was having an affair with Dixie, those segments were getting ratings each and every week. And it was something different and something unique, and it wasn't just your standard, this group wants to come in and take over versus this group that's been here, you know, that we've seen over and over again with TNA. So I think they've got amazing wrestlers, but they've got to give the fans a reason to watch in terms of a storyline that can go along with the wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. One thing that's always been kind of a disappointment to me as the years have gone on, and of course no one can control this, was just the way the internet and social media obviously takes a lot of surprise of elements out, and it makes it hard. But, you know, the genie's out of the bottle. There's nothing they can do about that now. They pretty much have to adapt to new technology the way society is and figure out different ways of still giving someone a surprise, someone that where you don't expect, not where weeks in advance you're kind of knowing, okay, well, this is probably where this is going to go. And I think that's hurt, you know, both organizations, at least from back during the heyday of the Attitude Era, and they were pulling in humongous ratings. I mean, obviously the internet was big then too, but I don't know, it was an interesting time period during that, and you had competition which made appointment viewing, like you say, you know, really important, and you just had to make sure, okay, Monday at 9 p.m., I got to watch at this time. And I think it's crazy too, because WWE was firing so intensely at that time, and they didn't even think to do a 3-hour. Now, to me, I feel like the product is a little further down, and now they're doing 3 hours, and it just waters it down a little more. And at least one of my complaints is it just seems like WWE is more, and almost, when I watch it now, it almost seems like it's more like Hollywood. It just seems like you're watching a film, and it doesn't have a little bit of that grittiness and the unpredictability that, to me, made wrestling kind of good when you could watch it in like some of the smaller arenas, and it was unpredictable, and it didn't have to be polished. And that's one of the things I liked. It's like, I didn't want to sit on a Monday and watch a film. I wanted to watch wrestling.
Yeah,
and it just looks like that now.
Right, and we'll touch on the WWE here in a segment. Last thing in terms of TNA, again, No Surrender happening this week. I think, you know, I've been a fan of Bully Ray in this heel role, but I do think that at Bound for Glory, that the belt needs to go on AJ for a couple of reasons. One, it's his time. You know, AJ should have been the center point of this company years ago, but I also think that putting AJ in that role, you get a guy that can go out there and pretty much have a good match with anybody on the roster. And I don't know if you watched Impact this past week.
No, I didn't. I didn't get a chance to get to that.
Well, it looks like they may be sowing the seeds for a Chris Sabin heel run.
Oh.
And I think a Sabin-Styles title program with Sabin as a heel and Styles as the babyface, that could be some pretty cool stuff, you know, that they put in terms of programming.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I agree with you on all the points, and why not? You know, Billy has done an excellent job. I mean, definitely from being in the business for so many years to where he is now, done a terrific job. And I think, yeah, it is, and it'll just make the intensity even more for AJ, you know, based off of how great Bully has done and for that type of setup and that matchup as well, too. So, yeah, I definitely say it. You know, they could always, worst comes to worst, they could always do what they used to do back in the day with Hogan and whoever else, or Flair and whoever else. If it's not working, they can always put the belt back on the other person again.
Yeah, and it's not like TNA. Like, TNA has, the one thing that they do have is a plethora of guys who I think could take that ball and run with it, you know, whether it's AJ, whether it's Aries, Bobby Roode, whether it's Magnus, James Storm, even though he's kind of been deep pushed lately. So they have no shortage of guys, you know, unlike the WWE, who I think probably only has four or five guys that are top guys.
Yeah, exactly.
TNA's got a bunch of guys that if you put some stock into them and let the fans believe in them, you got a bunch of guys that can carry the company.
Oh, yeah, definitely, without a doubt. So I absolutely agree, and you know, it'll be interesting to see if we go over the next couple of months, at least with TNA, to see, you know, where things are going to go with that. And it's definitely going to be kind of exciting to check it out, and hopefully it'll match up with everything that we're all hoping for.
I hope so, too. Like, I'm a TNA fan, and so, you know, I hope they can get things right in terms of the financial side, and you know, maybe that'll help things progress in terms of what we see on TV each week.
Oh, yeah, I hope so, too.
But we did mention the WWE, and Night of Champions is coming up. So wanted to kind of get your thoughts on the current WWE product, and in particular the big matchup set with Randy Orton taking on Daniel Bryan. And a lot of people on the Internet have been kind of moaning and complaining in terms of how Daniel Bryan's been booked. What is your take on it, and do you think that this is something that, with John Cena being out with an injury, this is something that can keep the company going for the next few months?
Well, first of all, I'm excited because it's the day before my birthday, so it's an early birthday gift. It's always ironic because my birthday is September 16th, and I always feel like whenever they do the pay-per-view, I almost can always predict, because they always seem to do Night of Champions like right around that time frame. It's always never at the beginning of the month or at the end of the month. It's always like right in that week, so it's always, I always can count on that. Like, yay, early birthday gift. I think it's genius, to be quite honest, because I don't see how Daniel Bryan could get over any more than what he already is. And to me, it almost reminds me of kind of like a Sting Flair scenario. It's like where Sting chased for so long, finally got it. When he finally got on top, it was kind of like a little anticlimactic. Wasn't really as big of a draw as when he was chasing for it. So to me, it's pure money. And I actually hope that it's a while before Daniel actually captures it, because why stop it now? You got a great storyline going with the Triple H trying to stop that against Daniel Bryan. You've got Daniel chasing it. I just don't see why he'd go to all this trouble just to have him capture it, you know, 1 month later, or however many months it's been, 1 month later, I'm assuming, in Night of Champions at kind of one of their blow-off pay-per-views. Doesn't make much sense to me.
And they've got a kind of ready-made story there. You've got, you know, The Shield. You got Big Show, maybe. You got Triple H. I think that would be a money match for Triple H in terms of, you know, coming back and actually being in the ring. And hopefully he would do the right thing for business and give Daniel Bryan a convincing tap-out win. Because I think if you have Bryan go through all of those guys and then ultimately beat Randy Orton, you know, he'll just end up being a bigger deal than he is now. I mean, the internet loves him, but the casual fan is still kind of warming up to this guy.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll take a little bit of time as well, too. You know, they're doing it right, though. I think they're doing an excellent job of, you know, certainly the underdog story, so that certainly helps in getting people behind him. And, yeah, I think with John Cena out, too, it is maybe a good opportunity. He was out, you know, once before with another injury a while back, and certainly allows other people to come to the top and, you know, kind of see what they're capable of and what they can do. And I think they really should take advantage of pushing as many people as they can during this opportunity. And it seems like maybe that's maybe what they're going to do.
And the other big match on Night of Champions is Curtis Axel and CM Punk. But Curtis Axel is kind of the afterthought, the third wheel, if you will, because the big story is about Punk and Heyman. And I think Paul Heyman, you know, whether you love him or hate him in terms of the actual man, Paul Heyman, and his effect on the business, you know, I think this character has been fantastic, and it really hasn't given a rub to Curtis Axel, but the interaction with Punk has been fantastic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, they're both are so great at what they do with Paul Heyman and with CM Punk, so putting them two together, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch where that goes. I'm almost kind of curious just if it's going to turn out to be some kind of, like, father knows best type scenario, and like, you know, sometimes you're the father that abuses you the most, you still care just as much at the end of the day just about what he thinks and what he does. Just seems to be kind of going that way. I could be totally off base and wrong, but just some of the looks that CM Punk has given, some of the facts that, you know, he's like, I was a Paul Heyman, I was a father to you when you didn't have it. They know the checkered past about CM Punk's family, so makes you wonder if that's kind of where it's setting up. I don't know how it would get to the end of that, but, you know, there's got to be some way, shape, or form where, obviously, I don't see CM Punk just beating the complete crap out of Paul Heyman. Either Curtis Axel will have to step in, there'll be an injury, and Heyman will be taken out. Don't know. There's so many different elements they could go with it, but it certainly has been fun to watch as time has gone on.
And you talk about Punk and just the greatness of Punk on the microphone, and I think it would be a smart idea, especially if Daniel Bryan is going to regain the belt like we all think he will. If you have Heyman and Punk somehow reconcile, and then CM Punk is this, you know, maniacal heel again, and you have that great matchup with Daniel Bryan that will not only be great in the ring, but also on the mic.
Oh, absolutely. That would be like a fantastic match for like a Royal Rumble or Survivor Series. Trying to think, you know, you'd want to have that like at a big one, and I guess those are the next two. I was just trying to think how it could maybe play out from the Night of Champions scenario to then. I mean, they definitely could kick it to Survivor Series and maybe even longer, depending on how much the fallout is. But so many different, you know, side stories that they could go with it. I'm just glad that they're kind of saving the Heyman-Punk matchup for a pay-per-view, because I didn't want them to really just give that away for free TV, because it's like, we have a chance of actually, selling something, and I think it'd be kind of cool dynamic, too, to see. Plus, you know, by having Curtis Axel in the mix, it takes a little bit of just the whole thing with Punk and Heyman off it, too. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of people wouldn't be expecting if somehow Heyman and Punk got back together and then turn on Axel. Who knows? So many different angles. It'd be really cool and interesting to watch.
Yeah, and then, you know, I finally want to get you out here on some quick hits, a couple quick questions in terms of the current WWE product. First thing I want to talk about is Darren Young. You know, a big story around SummerSlam, Darren Young coming out openly gay. And I was really surprised that, you know, we all know how opportunistic Vince McMahon and the WWE are.
Yeah.
And to this point, we really haven't had anything that, you know, I mean, they obviously they don't have to come out and you know, maybe that's a bad choice of words. they don't have to come out and explicitly state, you know, that Darren Young is openly gay. But, you know, they've got this thing with the Primetime Players and Zeb Coulter and the Real Americans. And you could have easily done something where Zeb is like, you know,
oh, true,
these aren't people like us. And you have Darren Young come out and say, you know, it's okay to be yourself and be who you are. And that's what being a real American is being who you are. And that way you kind of tie into it, you kind of touch on it, but at the same time, you don't go explicit with it and you don't exploit it.
Wow, that's actually a great idea. I mean, yeah, because at least in that scenario, it would have fit for both sides to have said the things that you just pointed out. So I absolutely agree. Yeah, I'm surprised Vince McMahon hasn't created some kind of rainbow T-shirt or something to sell. It's like if Vince can make a shirt and sell it, you know, he'll figure it out some way. Yeah. It's like in some capacity somehow. But yeah, I like Primetime Players before all of this, and I guess it seems like in sports nowadays, it's the new thing to come out. I'm actually thinking about coming out and telling everyone I'm heterosexual so that maybe I can get a raise and a promotion in my career.
I
can take what I can get.
Breaking news right here on the Kings of Sport. Timmy
That's
D
right.
is openly heterosexual.
I am heterosexual. You heard it here first.
And finally, you know, you mentioned the programming in the 3 hours of Raw, which I think has been a good thing for the WWE in terms of their bottom line. But as a viewer, a lot of those weeks are tough to get through. And then you also got SmackDown, which is kind of become an afterthought. You've got the main event. You got all these venues for WWE programming. And kind of ironically, the one show that is fresh and actually has casual viewers talking is the Total Divas show on E!
Yeah, oh my gosh, such a great point. Hey, you know what's sad, and I'll be happy or not happy to admit, however you look at it, I actually find myself more entertained by that too, more appointment television by that. And it's not just because it's girls. I guess I like more of the behind the scenes. I've always kind of liked more about that anyway, I guess obviously because I'm in the business, you know, than I have about the other. And with Raw, I like that, but again, it hasn't really been appointment television in a while. And not to mention, I have the DVR, so I'm going to be like, okay, well, I'm going to fast forward because so much of it is predictable that I kind of can zip through certain parts of Raw and then stop and zip through it again, so I can cram like a 3-hour show into maybe 30, 40 minutes, and that's me stopping. But when you're done with the commercials and just a little bit of everything else, it really doesn't leave much. You hit the nail right on the head again.
Yeah, I think the three-hour Raw is what DVRs were made for.
Yeah, I know. I can't imagine if I didn't have DVR, like, I would be like, oh, my gosh. Because then I would probably have to be forced to, like, check out a little more often, because I'd be like, well, in case I miss something, let me make sure I have it here. But with DVR, it's so great.
Yeah, the only thing I can say is thank God the NFL is back, because now when Triple H starts the show, you can go and click over to the game, and 20 minutes later, he'll still be finishing up his speech.
Yeah, you're right. You just come back and you go, I didn't miss anything. Yeah, it's like, I don't know, just everything always seems like it opens all the time, like the same exact way. It's like either, I mean, very rarely do you have a match. It's always someone coming out, talk about something 20 minutes later, and then it kind of seems like the ending is good. Like maybe the ending or like the top of the hour. I just remember when it was a two-hour show, you always could expect like right at 10 was going to be good and the ending was going to be good. And now it's kind of like, it always seems like the ending to me is someone dead on the ground while you got the other wrestler with the boot on the stomach holding the championship or the hand raised up in the air. It's like, I feel like I see that same ending like every week, and it's like, really? You know, just give me something, like, give me back in the day when Vince would be revealed as the higher power or something where I can just sink my teeth into to make me be like, oh my gosh, I got to tune in again, and not like same old, same old.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the kind of the big thing. I mean, there's some great things with the WWE, but a lot of it is same old, same old. So hopefully, you know, with Cena being out, we'll start to see some new things on WWE programming.
I hope so. I mean, I don't know if they need a fresh person, a different perspective. I mean, who knows? I just wish they could do something. I think there's so many different elements. That's why when we talked at the very beginning about what some of the problems were, I was thinking, like, it's almost like you can't even really just pinpoint one. Like, so many different elements that if they all kind of came together and worked in the right scenario, you know, then maybe we could get kind of back to where things were. And they don't even have to be the attitude era for me. Just something where you're like, kind of like you said, again, appointment TV, where you're like, man, I can't wait till next week. Because I missed that with the pay-per-views. You'd watch the pay-per-view the very next day. You'd be like, all right, I got to tune in to see the fallout. And that's actually kind of, for at least 1 week, how it was for me after SummerSlam. It's like after all the craziness happened with Randy Orton, it's like, all right, I got to tune in and see. And then after that, it's kind of like, all right, well, back to what it was again after that 1 week.
Yep. So, but there is appointment television each and every week, and that is with our friend Timmy D. And why don't you let the people know where they can watch you, Tim, where they can follow you on the internets out there, and, you know, how they can keep up with you.
Well, I'm also involved in another promotion called Wrestling Championship Association. We're doing an event September 13th in Albany, Georgia, and also they can check out pretty much all around. I'm defending the Pro Wrestling Crown Jewel of Cable Cup all over the states. I actually won it in Norway, so we're going in other countries. So the best thing they can do is they can check out youtube.com/, which everyone pretty much figures that part, and then the Timmy D Show, which is TheTimmyDShow. They can also go on Google, YouTube, type in Anarchy, NWA Anarchy, Pro Wrestling, and all of that stuff will pop up as well. And, of course, you spell my name, Tim, and then it's letter E, period, and then the letter D, and that's me.
All right, good stuff, Tim. Hopefully, next time you come on, we'll have the full team here in place to talk to you, because I definitely think you and Brother Alfred would have a great conversation about the state of the WWE.
Oh, I would love to. You sound like a great guy. You're a great person as well, and you have a great show, and I really appreciate you letting me be a part of it.
Not a problem. You got an open invite anytime you want to come back and talk to us, man.
Well, thank you so much, and then definitely best of luck to you and your show as well.
Thank you, man. That is Timmy D. We are the Kings of Sports, or I am the King of Sports, singular, this week. And we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, sports talk for our generation. Hope all the world is in our generation.
It's all left up to us to change this present situation. Take a lesson from our elders. Don't make the same mistake. Let's do the world with love and get rid of all the hate.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. It is time to close up shop with the segment you guys anticipate each and every week, the often imitated but never ever duplicated segment 4. But before we get into that, we got to take care of some business. And as we always do, we got to send a shout out to the good people at Audible.com. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks, and they have over 100,000 titles to choose from in every genre. I'm talking about thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and many, many more. Audible titles play on the iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. And for you guys, the listeners of the Kings of Sport podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you an opportunity to check out their service. And as we always say, man, Audible has got some of the greatest titles out there available for download. I'm talking about The Hobbit. I'm talking about Star Trek Into Darkness. I'm talking about Gone Girl. I'm talking about Bad Luck and Trouble. I'm talking about 50 Shades of Grey, ladies. I'm talking about Marvin Lewis's autobiography. Yes, I am a good coach. Marcus Vandenberg, you can shut the hell up.
Love that book.
It's 2 pages long.
That's all you need for it.
With a foreword by Romeo Crennel. But to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Again, that is audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport to get your free audiobook. Again, audible.com is down with the Kings of Sport. You guys are down with the Kings of Sport. So get down with audibletrial.com. And we mentioned it. Segment 4, we bring you the latest and greatest in the world of sports and pop culture. And every now and then you get a great televised moment where sports and pop culture collide. And we got that on Saturday night. During the Michigan-Notre Dame game on ESPN, where Marshall Mathers, a.k.a. Eminem, showed up at halftime to talk to Brent Musburger and Kirk Herbstreit. And for the people that didn't get to see this, Marcus, kind of set the scene and let the people know how awkward this moment was.
Eminem strikes me as an awkward person to begin with. So when you put him in the booth with Kirk Herbstreit, who maybe listens to Eminem but probably doesn't, and Brent Musburger, who has been known to be a bit awkward and creepy. He did this 2-minute segment, and basically he came on to promote his new album that comes out in November, and plus they're using his new song, I guess, as part of the ESPN broadcast lead-in song or whatever. And Eminem came off as someone who really, A, doesn't do live television, which I understand. B, someone who really doesn't do sports, really, even though they did ask him about the Detroit Lions. But he just looked just fucked up. Like, I don't know if he was high or if he was just pulling one on us, or I don't know what it was, but it was just an awkward interview, and you need to go back and watch. There's a great gif, actually, of Eminem just looking befuddled during a question from Brent Musburger. So, Alfred, what did you think of the interview?
Yeah, I got this horrible feeling because I know Eminem is sober now and he went through a horrible drug phase. He's been through a couple of them, but then over the recent years, he's gotten clean and sober. But when I saw him and they opened up the interview, he had his mouth hanging open. He was staring into space. And now in retrospect, looking at that again, I think it's just because people were yelling in his ear or something like that. He just kept grabbing his headset and he said, "I don't do live television. I really don't like doing live television." At the end, he even said, "I'm really uncomfortable right now." So I just think the live aspect got to him. But he, yeah, like Marcus said, he's always been very awkward. He's an introvert, which is why he struggled with drugs, because he doesn't like being famous. He doesn't like fame. And it showed here. It was a terrible, terrible, awkward interview. It's one of those moments where you're not going to be able to sit still and look at that. It's just so uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, as a viewer, it was just the most random 2.5-3 minutes of television I've seen in a while. And Marcus, I know you're the expert on this particular matter, but This is on ESPN, which is in under the umbrella of ABC. Mm-hmm. But are ESPN and ABC, are they affiliated with the VH1 and MTV and the Viacom family?
They're not.
Okay, because the only reason I ask is VH1 for the past few nights and maybe the past couple weeks have been showing 8 Mile like it was brand new. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if this was some sort of multi-layered strategy or corporate synergy to get Eminem over with the ESPN crowd. But, okay, so then they're not connected. So, but my thing was, first of all, you mentioned Kirk Herbstreit, who could not have been more of a third wheel if his name was Tricycle. Because Kirk was just sitting there on the offside, just looking at Brent and Eminem with this quasi-love fest going on. And Eminem's like, you know, Brent, if I had one wish, it would be for you to call a game with Pat Summerall and John Madden and Al Michaels, and it'd be a Detroit Lions game in the Super Bowl because you're a legend. And then you got Brent, creepy-ass Musburger. He's like, no, Eminem, you're the legend, my friend. You've got 13 Grammys and the first hip-hop single to ever win an Oscar award, and I'm sure Brent was reading off cue cards. You're the legend,
Mathers,
by
the way. Did you catch that? Yeah. When he first talked to me, he said, "Hey, Mathers," or something like that. I'm like,
yes,
last
talk like that.
And that was the other thing. Like, I don't know if Eminem has kind of asked people to call him Marshall Mathers for this, the Marshall Mathers LP Reloaded or whatever it's called. But it's like everybody that knows Eminem knows his real name is Marshall Mathers, but you wouldn't call him Marshall Mathers if you're just talking to him. So it's like, was there an edict from Eminem's camp to call him Marshall or call him Mathers? Because Brent and Kirk made it a point to, we're here in the booth with Marshall Mathers. I'm like, nigga, that's Eminem.
Well, it's his new album is called the Marshall Mathers LP, too. So maybe he just wants that association so that people can remember it. Because it's been a while since Marshall Mathers LP came out. And that it could be part of that.
Yeah, I think it's probably it was probably a Eminem call for them to say, "Hey, let's just, you know, stick to."
Hey, Mathers.
Well, that part was the mess up, was the goof. But I think they wanted to just stick to his actual name as opposed to his persona.
Hey, Mathers, do you have a hot girlfriend I can ogle at during the halftime? Oh yeah, but I mean the good thing for Eminem is I guess the single Berserk, which is, it's not a bad single. I mean, it's kind of like most post drug Eminem singles where, you know, he's got some good lines and the beat's good. They use the, Billy Squire with the stroke. They use that song as the remix for the basis of the song. So it's a solid radio song, but, and I know like Jamie or somebody out there who's a music head is like, Billy Squires, who the hell is Billy Squires? And I'm like, in my defense, full disclosure, it is 3:20 in the morning, and I'm on my sixth Busch Ice. So, whew, I pronounce it however I want to pronounce it. When you get a show, you can pronounce it the way you want. Side note, Jamie is coming out with a podcast, a hip-hop podcast here. So shout out to Jamie's podcast whenever it debuts. We will have you back on, brother, to promote that. But, yeah, it was just a really weird kind of amalgam of, you know, when that social media, the pop culture world kind of crosses with the sports world. And it was just an uncomfortable 2 minutes. I think Eminem, like you mentioned, he was uncomfortable. That's not his setting. He's not, you know, he's not like 2 Chainz or 50 or even Jay-Z, one of those guys that loves the media. Eminem's, you know, for all his bravado on the tracks, when it comes to being himself and being interviewed, he's never been one of those dudes that loves the spotlight.
Speaking of the spotlight in music, Bruno Mars, did you see the story?
Yes.
Can we discuss this?
Yes, we can.
What the hell, man? What the hell?
Are you talking about how he's going to be performing at the Super Bowl?
Correct.
You don't like that?
No. Don't like
why? What is your... I mean, I don't...
Oh, this is a second...
I'm not a big fan of
this
Bruno Mars.
This is the second incident of light skin on light skin violence tonight.
No, because Alfred knows better. He knows. You know, we're talking about, you know, I always feel the Super Bowl is reserved for artists that have a extensive catalog of hits, and I don't think Bruno Mars comes even close to fitting into that category.
No.
But there's been a lot of pressure on the NFL to get younger and hipper in their Super Bowl halftime shows. After the Janet Jackson fallout, they booked a lot of acts who were older and maybe people didn't get excited about. So now they're pushing the younger acts like the Black Eyed Peas, who they were hit or miss when they performed, and then Bruno Mars and Beyonce.
Now, first of all, Janet Jackson fallout. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
And second of all, I think if I'm the NFL, I mean, first of all, I ain't got no beef with Bruno Mars. I think in terms of the current crop of pop musicians, Bruno's probably one of the more talented,
very talented
artists out there. I dig Bruno, and he was very funny on SNL. So I give Bruno his props. But I think the NFL, you know, they've had a lot of nostalgia acts over the years. You talk about The Who. You talk about Bruce Springsteen.
Gabriel was one
Tom
of them.
Tom Petty. Yeah. I think if you're going to go to all these rock and roll nostalgia acts, I want to see some hip-hop nostalgia acts. And since we're in New Orleans, is New Orleans Super Bowl this year?
No, New York.
Oh, it's New York? Okay. Well, still, my theory still works because I'm saying we should have a hip-hop nostalgia act. And you know, you could go with KRS-One, Boogie Down Productions.
Stop.
Public
stop,
Enemy.
Stop.
Let me stop. Outcast.
Listen.
Who doesn't want to see Flavor Flav?
You forget who lives in this country, right?
Who doesn't want to see the Wu-Tang Clan? Wu-Tang is for the children.
Oh, boy.
Method Man.
You took it out away with Jay-Z. I think they took it out away with Jay-Z, I think. You figured, you know, I was expecting someone to have New York ties for the Super
Jay-Z
Bowl.
Jay-Z would have been a great call.
Jay-Z is mainstream enough now that he could have done it easily. He could have brought Beyonce back out for a song.
Can he do it as an agent, though? Would that be tampering?
Yeah, the NFL's not too happy with Jay-Z. I don't think they would mess with that.
Wouldn't be considered tampering, I don't think, but Alfred's right. Yeah, probably.
You never know, he could slip some lyrics in at halftime, you know what I'm saying? Like, y'all don't understand, Jay-Z is on the microphone looking for an MVP, trying to sign Jacoby Jones. What?
I did that off the top right there.
Yeah, but Bruno Mars,
I like Bruno, though. Bruno's a good artist.
He is, as far as talent, as watered down as music has become, and it's the YouTube generation of singles that'll go viral, and so the talent takes a hit, Bruno Mars is one of those guys who 10, 15 years from now is going to be associated with the likes of Prince and Michael Jackson because he's one of those kind of effeminate artists who's super talented.
And I'll take Bruno Mars over old-ass Madonna any day.
I think I would, too.
I don't know.
That Madonna halftime show was terrible.
Yeah, it was not the best.
The last great halftime show, in my opinion, was Prince.
Yeah, that wasn't very good.
He had the Florida A&M band.
What about last year? Hello, or this year? Was it
Beyonce?
Yeah.
Oh, I like Beyonce, but it was good. It was a good performance, but to me, Beyonce is kind of, and maybe it's because I'm a little bit older than you guys, but to me, Beyonce is not on a legend status yet.
Hmm.
You talk about, you know, like a Janet Jackson, like a Michael Jackson, like The Who, like, you know, Bruce Springsteen or Prince. You know, Beyonce, she's a future legend, but she's not there yet. So for me, watching Beyonce was kind of like, they just trying to get, you know, the young heads to watch the halftime show.
You got to remember, she goes back to Destiny's Child, too. And during those days, people who watch Destiny's Child are significantly older.
I thought it was, I mean, I'm not a Beyonce fan at all, but her performance was solid enough that I would consider seeing her tour. It already passed, but I thought it was a good performance.
I mean, that ass is legendary, but I don't know if Beyonce is legendary yet.
I just thought it was funny how she brought out Destiny's Child and their mics went out. You better recognize.
Yes. That was shout out to Kelly and Michelle. Maybe we'll do like 20 years from now when we have a Kings of Sport reunion at the Super Bowl. But ladies and gentlemen, Nate, Marcus, and Alfred. All of a sudden, Alfred's mic cuts out.
And your guys' mics cut out.
You know, and Marvin Lewis will be like, what happened? But let's end off today's show with a preview for next week, because I'm sure we will be talking about this on next week's show. The big fight coming up.
Yeah.
Floyd Money Mayweather and Canelo Alvarez. I'm looking forward to this, Marcus. This might be one of the last big-time fights that we see, you know, for a while.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think anytime Floyd fights now, that's half the battle, is having him, you know, fight someone. But there's still a shot for Pacquiao. And I still think, even though it's probably 3 or 4 years past its prime now, I think that people would still be interested in watching Mayweather and Pacquiao fight, even if it was in 2014.
Right, but I'm with Nate from the standpoint of Canelo Alvarez being this early into his prime, arguably the best fighter not named Floyd Mayweather, and Floyd Mayweather to fight him. And Alvarez, Alvarez has a very strong Mexican following, and it's ahead of a Mexican holiday of Spanish Independence Day. And I said arguably. Obviously, you're going to argue with me, but arguably, Canelo Alvarez, if you look at him right now, is the best fighter not named Floyd Mayweather.
He's not. Andre Ward is a lot better than
Andre Ward is very good, but I would take Canelo Alvarez over Andre Ward. Just based on potential. I'm not going to sit here and look at his catalog and say, well, yes, based on what he's done. I'm looking at potential, and if, you know, potential going forward, I think Canelo has the chance to be something more special.
I can't do this again.
You not?
I'm not going to argue boxing.
I want to hear the points that you have.
Why Canelo Alvarez isn't the second best fighter in the world?
I said arguably the best fighter not named Floyd Mayweather.
He's not. I'm not doing this argument with you. The fight itself, Floyd's going to win. I think Canelo has the power to hurt Floyd. And if Floyd, you know, for some reason decides to goof around or get cute, he will get hurt. He will get hit. But I think if Canelo had this fight 5 years from now, he, you know, assuming, you know, not assuming Floyd was 40, but assuming that Floyd was the same age and Canelo had 5 years under his belt, I think we would be talking about, you know, Canelo winning this fight. But I just think that Floyd is going to expose Canelo's flaws in the ring. He's a young fighter. Yes, he is, you know, 42-0-1, but a lot of those fights have been cupcakes. And, you know, I think Floyd's just a better fighter, and it'll go to distance. It'll go 12 rounds, but, you know, Floyd's going to dominate this fight.
I don't know about dominate, but I think Canelo Alvarez is going to have an opening early in the fight, much like Shane Mosley. Now, he's probably, hopefully, going to be in shape for the whole fight, but if Canelo's going to win this fight, he's going to want to go in big. He's going to walk in bigger than Floyd Mayweather. He's one of the bigger fighters that has faced. And that could be a problem for Floyd, but if you talk to guys like Austin Trout, who faced Canelo Alvarez, and you talk to boxers, a lot of people say that Floyd Mayweather will be able to masterfully counter any size disadvantage he's going to have against Canelo Alvarez. I mean, Floyd Mayweather is a very good defensive fighter, and that kind of works in his favor against an aggressive guy like Canelo Alvarez.
Yeah, so you're picking Floyd, too, Big Nasty?
I'm picking Floyd.
Okay, so we got two for Floyd. I'm going to go ahead, make it the triumvirate. Floyd gets to Claire Huxtable Award. I'm picking Floyd. And not only am I picking Money Mayweather, I'm going a step further, and I'm saying Floyd knocks out Canelo.
I don't see that happening.
Knocks out?
No way.
Yes. Saying Floyd, because I see Canelo getting frustrated with the counterpunching. I see, because he's in there with a Jedi. He's never been in there with a Jedi before. He's been in there with some decent fighters. But he's never been in there with an elite guy the caliber of Floyd Money Mayweather. And we've seen Floyd has the ability to frustrate his opponents. I see Canelo getting too aggressive and getting a little loosey-goosey. Floyd finds a way to counter that, uses his aggressiveness to his advantage, and I can see Floyd putting Canelo on the canvas.
Floyd's power is not something that he's, you know, known for.
I'm not saying it's going to be like Ray Mercer, Tommy Morrison type of knockout. I'm just saying, you know, all it takes is one good punch. And Floyd has a couple good punches left in those gloves. And, you know, all it takes is one on the button. And I can see him countering Canelo. Canelo gets a little too over-aggressive. And Floyd puts him down.
Mm, Yeah.
It's not impossible. I just don't see it.
I don't mean, you know, just take out the Vitor Ortiz fight, which was a bit of a flute situation. You know, we're talking about a guy who, you know, hasn't.
Stopped Hatton.
Yeah, that was the last time, and that was 6 years ago, so.
How many times have you fought in the last 6 years? Six?
Six times.
there you go.
And before, you know, before Hatton, we're talking about way before the Jigga fight, so this is not something he's known for, so I think, you know, Canelo is a better fighter than that. He has got a decent chin, so I just can't see Floyd, you know, knocking this dude out. But
what if Canelo was fighting Marvin Lewis? Could Marvin Lewis knock him out?
No. I think
Marvin Lewis would knock out Floyd Mayweather. You get in there and he would be, you know what? Either that or a Marvin Lewis coached fighter would be able to knock out Floyd Mayweather.
So Marvin Lewis coached Floyd Mayweather. Oh, speaking of which, we got to talk next week. We got to make a point to watch The Ultimate Fighter, man, because I saw the first episode. Ultimate Fighter is going hard this season.
Good.
I really am enjoying The Ultimate Fighter, so we might have to talk about that next week.
Okay.
And maybe I'd like to see The Ultimate Fighter with Ronda Rousey as one coach and Marvin Lewis is the other coach.
If Canelo Alvarez, who a lot of people are down on because he's had a very easy schedule, but against Austin Trout was a tough dude. If he beats Floyd Mayweather, where are we? I mean, I'm not a pound for pound guy. I think it's the dumbest thing in sports because it always changes based on who won last. But if we were to take one of these BS pound for pound rankings, where does that place Canelo Alvarez if he beats Floyd Mayweather?
Top
of the list.
If he beats if Floyd is the best in the world. Canelo beats him. I think by virtue of that, you'd have to put Canelo at the top of the list.
I would still put Andre Ward above him.
I mean, how are we saying he beat Floyd? Is it a decision? Is it a knockout? How does he beat Floyd?
He would have to knock out Floyd.
What if he just outclassed him every single round?
Actually, they might be more impressive than knocking out Floyd. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you could say a knockout is a fluke.
Yeah. If he were to, you know, outclass Floyd, then I think he would have to be up there with Ward. The issue with Ward, though, is his health. He's out for the time being, so he hasn't fought in a minute. But yeah, I think he'd be up there. Because we're talking about, you know, besides Ward and Mayweather, we're talking about Marquez, who
let's go.
Yeah. So yeah, he would be in the midst for sure. Where he would go from there, I don't know, in that division. But, yeah, he would be at the top.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying this is probably the last big fight unless we get a Pacquiao Mayweather, because the heavyweight division is non-existent. If Floyd wins, cool, you know, and who's left on the horizon? If Canelo wins, maybe you've got some intriguing matchups down the road, but – you know, this is probably going to be the last great fight we have for at least a year or so.
Well, the fight to watch on this card is the actual undercard fight. Danny Garcia, Lucas Matisse. The winner of this fight could be next in line for Floyd. And for Matisse, he is someone who is not a household name, but he has amazing power. You should go back and go on YouTube and look at some of his recent fights and some of his recent KOs. He's someone who doesn't draw at all, but he has the power to really give Floyd an issue. Would Floyd take that fight? I don't know, but he has to get past Garcia at first. But down the line, you know, you never know.
Can't wait.
That's all you got to say, Bart Scott?
Can't wait.
Oh, man. So, yeah, it'll be a great fight. So we'll definitely be talking about the fallout from that next week, as well as the Ultimate Fighter, as well as the Manning Bowl, the Football on Your Phone Bowl, as well as
Night of Champions.
Yeah, Night of Champions. A lot of good stuff. TJ McClune will be in the house next week. So, yeah, it'll be a very fun show, and I'm looking forward to it. So that's going to be it for tonight or this morning or whenever you're listening to it. So, Marcus, why don't you let the people know where they can follow you, where they can follow your work, and where they can get gambling tips from you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Marco Will, MarcoWio. And about the gambling advice, Texans -3.5, book it.
Big Nasty.
This week, or are you saying next week?
Oh, for the Charger game tomorrow night, Monday night.
Big Nasty, where can they find you at?
At This Is Nasty, go to Bleach Report, read the articles, watch the videos. You know the drill.
And you can follow me at N8, M-O-Z-A-I-K, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow all of us at CosPod on Twitter, KOS_POD. Hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Like, share, rate, review. Stitcher, audible.com/thekingsofsport. Place to be Nation, placetobenation.com. Shout out to our friends over at Place to Be Nation. I think that's it for the shilling this week. Big shout out to Timmy D for stopping by from Anarchy Wrestling, the chat wrestling earlier on in the show. Big shout out to you guys for downloading the podcast and listening this week. And big shout out to Floyd Mayweather for winning. Who knows? Maybe he'll hear that and he'll come on the show. Like, I think Floyd is like one of those dudes that Googles himself.
I don't see Floyd Googling anything.
Floyd pays somebody to Google Floyd Mayweather just to see what people are saying about him.
There's a guy on the money team who's this Google guy.
Right, yeah. There's a
next, the money, to the, next to the money guy.
The yeah, guy next to the money guy. Yeah. Next to the umbrella guy.
Just carries around an iPad all day like, hey, Google guy, what are they saying about me?
Are they still talking about my appearance on Chili Needs a Man?
Just the good stuff today. Just the good stuff. I'm a little fragile.
What did Big Nasty say about me today? So that's going to do it for this week, man. Another fun show. Stick and stay. Come back next week. We'll have more good stuff for you. Maybe we'll be sober. Maybe we won't. That's part of the fun. So for Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham, for the gambler Marcus Vandenberg, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. And you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X.